intro.
Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, the Chicago White Sox local site for baseball prospectus, their crown jewel. Joining you early Wednesday morning in Elkhart, Indiana, is me, the editor, James Fegan. In Madison, Wisconsin, our youth correspondent, Ethan Spaulding.
It's still Tuesday night here.
Shut up, Ethan. And our special guests tonight in Washington, D.C. Is that where you are, Craig?
Technically, I'm in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Really? Oh,
wasn't that voted like the snootiest town in the country?
It was. I'm doing my best to bring us down in that respect.
Better than Sandusky, Ohio, in terms of recognizable names for towns. Craig Goldstein, the minor league editor for Baseball Prospectus.
Well, thank you for having me.
Has there been a White Sox in a 10-pack yet? I kind of gave up on checking that because
There has not. There has not.
Was there even a call-up like article for Tim Anderson, or was he just kind of ignored?
No, there was, and I believe Fulmer got one as well.
Little Birdie?
I don't think we did for Birdie.
Well, he hasn't been called up yet.
So. Yeah, well, that would be a good reason. But he'll get one.
What about for Anthony Renato?
No. I mean, he got one once upon a time.
What about Matt Davidson this year?
Well, I mean, he broke his foot. It's just
sad. The day he got called up, he got a major league hit. He got a hit in his first White Sox at bat, I think.
No, maybe in the first game.
It was his second at bat, and then he broke his foot on that play.
No, he was running the third on another hit. He was about to score. Now he'll never score.
Rest in peace to Matt Davidson. He never scored.
Just like Kevin.
Charlie Tilson, did he get a call up?
He did not. Is he up? Did he come up?
No, he immediately tore his hamstring.
Oh, yeah. The right man, you guys, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's insane. Also,
what
Kevin
are you
Smith.
Doing to your very borderline prospects?
Yeah, like, that's an undersold covered part of, like, the whole, the White Sox are snake bitten, all the rookies died. Like, none of these rookies were going to help very much.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it was still really weird that, like, Kevin Smith didn't get to play a major league game before he, like, blew up.
In an ideal situation, Kevin Smith
okay,
wouldn't
well,
get
that's
to play
even
a major
stretching.
League game.
Kevin Smith is stretching even well, fringe prospect.
Oh, he's not a prospect. It's more that it happened to, like, every single prospect. That the Sox, like every single minor league guy the Sox can't called up except for Anderson.
Except Kevin any Smith, of the ones we'd actually care about.
Kevin Smith died before he got called up. And to be clear, they didn't actually die. But Charlie Tilson the day he got called up. Matt Davidson the day he got called up. Jason Coates in the day he got called up left the game after being hit by a pitch.
No, he got hit by J.B. Shuck.
Oh, yeah. He also got hit by a pitch in that game.
Am I misremembering, or was Davidson up as like a 26th man on a doubleheader?
It's possible.
No,
I don't think so.
I think he was going to be up for a bit.
Okay. I think he would have gotten a transaction analysis blurb, but then he got hurt.
Kind of just to laugh at the fact that he still exists.
He has decent hair.
So did Gordon Beckham.
I know. That was one of my best / worst tweets.
Were you running the ship when Tim Anderson got ranked higher in the Baseball Prospectus top 10 for the White Sox above Carlos Rodon?
When was that?
Will that be the only year Carlos Rodon was a prospect?
I think it was when Parks was still there.
I've only been in charge of minor league. I've only been the minor league editor since June of last year.
I see. So this one would be
only this offseason. Yeah. So that was Chris Mellon and or Nick Polaris.
I guess I'm trying to get a larger perspective or a different perspective or outside perspective.
I was part of that discussion. I mean, so I can probably give some. But it wasn't, like, my call.
Right. So I guess I'm trying
I mean,
to...
there was a big tilt towards middle infielders, which we carried over this year. I think we had 19 shortstops on our top 101. I think, you know, in the same vein that put Addison Russell in front of Chris Bryant in this list, they had a significant tilt towards up the middle players.
Which, is that still the case?
I certainly have that bias. I don't know if I have it to the same degree. Are you asking if I would put Tim Anderson over Rodon right now?
Not explicitly. I don't know. I'm just probing.
I think I might. I think, you know, the tough part with Anderson is whether he's going to get on base, not whether he's going to hit, right? I mean, I think he can hit. What, he's hitting like 280s, mid-280s right now?
Right.
I don't think that's unreasonable. I think he has 7 walks, something like that, in like 300 plate appearances. And that's
most of them recently.
Yeah. I mean, and that, you can take that as a trend if you want, potentially, but he's never been much for walking. So I don't know if we can count on that to kind of continue. I think he was late to baseball, right? So you could say there's a little bit more like latent baseball ability, which could come in the form of approach at the plate. But on the whole, I don't think he's ever going to walk very much. But, you know, if he's 280s, that brings down his value a lot. If he hits 310, it doesn't matter, really. You know, if he's it makes him an extremely high-end option. And I think we've seen his glove. You know, people questioned whether he was going to stick at shortstop. His speed is great. Center field was often an option. I saw him, look, it's only one game, but I saw him a couple years ago in the California Carolina League All-Star game when it was in Wilmington, and his hands are actually quite good. Like, his reflexes are really good. So it doesn't shock me that he stayed at the position. I think he's got a strong arm. I think it was a little bit of a scattershot ranking or a scattershot thing at the time, but it doesn't shock me that he stayed at the position, given what I saw out of him. Again, it was very brief, but that's a little bit of what evaluation is, right? Taking like these small sample sizes and drawing kind of larger scale conclusions from them. So I think I don't think that he's going to move off of shortstop. I actually think he's going to be quite good there defensively. And, you know, we can talk about what he doesn't do, but I think it kind of obscures what he does. And Rodon is someone I've been very high on for a while, and it kind of seems, you know, I remember, and it sticks in my head, Ethan's tweet about him that was like, you know, if it's going to click for him, it's all going to happen at once. And I agree with that. I just don't know when that's going to happen. And, you know, it's a lot easier to take a bat than an arm in general. So I'd probably take Anderson over Rodon going forward. But I think, you know, I think there's a reasonable argument for going the other way if you wanted to.
I think it was a current member of the BP prospect team who didn't even include Tim Anderson among his groups of prospect shortstops not too long ago.
Well, yeah, because that current member thought he was a center fielder.
Name rhymes with Fabricio Rubio.
a recent current member, I see.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is what everyone has their different takes. And, you know, it could be well argued that I let a one game sample where I saw him field a couple balls overly sway my judgment, and that the reasoned perspective was that he might not hack it at short and was more likely a center fielder. And you could also argue that if he was only going to be average at shortstop and his legs would make him a, you know, 65 or 70 grade center fielder, that might be more valuable.
Yeah.
And if that's how you see him, if you see him as a 50 shortstop or a 70 center fielder, maybe you proactively move him to center.
Yeah. And that's what I was always thinking before. I thought that, oh, well, he doesn't seem to profile that well at short, because at least when I saw him, I just remember watching games on TV in person or anything, but when he was in the Arizona or in spring training a year or two ago, or not this recent spring training, the one previous, and there was balls hit him, and he bricked them all the time. And it didn't look like he could stick at that position. But since, like, watching him on TV so far, since he's come to the majors, he looks like a completely different shortstop. He looks like a guy who's meant there. His arm is fantastic, way better than I thought it would be by reading scouting reports and the very limited amount that I'd seen him. And the range is good. The instincts seem fine. He looks like a shortstop when you watch him. Maybe not an elite, great shortstop, but he looks like a very legit shortstop.
I mean, he certainly has the flair for it, right? I mean, you and I have on GChat, like, sent GIFs of what he's done. Like, he's had at least two or three, like, eye-popping plays.
Especially with the arm. He's made some of those classic Jeter throws that where he's
Yeah, the jump throw. I remember one, just he kind of was deep in the hole, and again, maybe I'm misremembering, but he just kind of submarined it because he was kind of on his way towards the outfield. And it like you said, it's a really impressive arm. You know, 2 years ago on that list that we had him above Rodon, he had a five arm. I think Chris Crawford did his list this last year, and he wasn't rating 50 tools, so he didn't list the arm, but I think he had a 50 there. It seems he's either adjusted something up or he compensates with a release or something like that, because what I've seen at the major league level would appear to be more than that.
Yeah, it's way better than I ever expected reading scouting reports. Like it all, because he's such a weird profile in how late he started baseball, I don't assume the scouting reports are wrong. I would not be surprised if he's just a completely different player.
Or not. Yeah, right. It could be a change over time, I mean, from the offseason to this season, which brings me, I was going to say, I remember in spring training, obviously they brought in Jimmy Rollins, right? Do you think he had any impact on him as a shortstop, like as a defensive, like whether it's mindset, whether he doesn't boot those easy plays or whatever it might be?
That was definitely a narrative in spring training that Jimmy Rollins would have an influence, and Tim talked about it during the spring. It definitely hasn't been brought back. Like, no one's talked about it since, but it's something that I would buy, considering Rollins' reputation, considering considering how they were together at the beginning of the season, and what the role Rollins was told he was going to have coming into the season was. It would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I would buy that too. And you know, I would buy it less as an impact on his arm necessarily.
Right.
As so much like if he was booting the just standard plays, then maybe it's a mentality or an approach thing just on the defensive side of the ball. And I could easily see a guy like Rollins, you know, having an impact on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope he did, because otherwise they just paid for the honor of being the last team he ever played for.
So you're counting them out for 2017 is what you're saying.
The whole like no one picking him up thing is not very optimistic.
What about John Danks? Same thing for him.
Yeah, the John Danks quote when they release him, like, "Oh, I'll sit by my phone and hope it rings," is just the saddest thing.
It's like, not even the Angels, who are putting Jared Weaver, who is by VP WAR -7 WAR this year, like the most ridiculous number I've ever seen from a WAR total, is he has been worth as negative as Mike Trout has been positive this year, and they couldn't pick up John Danks. They didn't see fit for him on the roster.
I'm betting they're not buying entirely into the WAR rating for Jared Weaver right now.
Can I say I think it's impressive what Jared Weaver is doing, even not in, like, I'm impressed with how bad he is. I'm impressed with how good he is, given what his stuff is.
Right. He throws, like, with the same stuff as probably a pretty solid amount of cut-rate high school arms.
Yeah. I think it's impressive.
I do, too. And I think DRA does have a bit of a difficulty with him. Not really DRA's fault. He's such an insane edge case. He's completely unlike any pitcher in baseball. So it's really...
Yeah, right. He's on one way end of the extreme, and it's just... it's forking the system.
Right. I mean, he is really bad. So, but he probably isn't worth -7 WAR, which would be like the
probably not.
Maybe the worst. Like you couldn't find a random minor league free agent or whatever. Like John Jenks wouldn't be 7 wins better than Jared Weaver.
I don't know if a paid saboteur could accomplish like a true -7 wins.
Well, a paid saboteur would probably be cut.
I think his breaking warp is and DRA is proof that it works, because I don't think you can put this into context.
Right. I agree with that. Like if you
had something that could control for Jared Weaver, everything else would be
wrong. We've actually been talking about this a bit in the stat Slack. Like we don't, it'd be difficult to account for him without making the whole model worse. Like the majority of the model, cause he's just that weird.
So yeah. He has a 1.29 ERA against the Sox this season in 2 starts.
That also helps. His run average and his ERA looks better because he's had a really soft schedule, and he's done really good against a couple really bad teams.
He struck out 3 of 51 batters faced, yet is allowing a 5.48 OPS.
I think it's cool that his BABIP is like 308, and that's it. And it's not like insanely high.
Also, his home run rate is really, really bad, but it's not like...
It's not James Shields.
Right. He's not James Shields. I mean, I think he's a worse pitcher than James Shields, but it's not by much. And James Shields does a hell of a lot harder.
It's going to be so perfect when James Shields is on the Angels next year.
How do they swing that? Our listeners would be interested in how that happens.
Do you think it would take a lot for the White Sox to send him there?
Just who wants to like get that? I don't know.
They're going to eat everything. They're going to have to replace Jared Weaver.
Yeah, but couldn't you do that with like a pitching machine?
I just think it's going to be perfect. Like it's just so. He's just going to be Jared Weaver next year. It's going to be amazing.
Well, can they eat the money too? Well, I actually don't really care if they eat the money, but the Sox probably aren't going to spend if they don't get that money eaten.
How much? They're not even paying him that much, are they? Like 11 or something?
Yeah, but he's also like horrible.
Yeah.
Not paying him that much, but their biggest free agent contract was $5 million for Austin Jackson in the first week of March.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And then he blew out his knee, so now they probably think like, "Whoa, we don't want to get burned with that kind of big deal again."
Yeah, that thing. When Austin Jackson's injury hurts you a lot because you couldn't find a replacement. You have some problems as an org. Because, like, I legitimately think that injury hurt them a lot. Because the difference between a healthy Austin Jackson and J.B. Shuck, it's a pretty good amount. Like, J.B. Shuck is really bad playing every day. He's not a good defensive center fielder. He can't hit at all. Like, he doesn't really do much for you.
He doubled his career home run total this year.
Well, but here's the question. They just need a good defensive center fielder, right?
No, they should probably get a hitter. That's just, you know, the standard they set themselves. They
probably stepped next to Fowler in the offseason.
Well, I don't know how, they have a mutual option, and I'm unclear if he declines it, how it works. Do you think he's going to be a free agent?
He's going to be
I think he'll get a new deal. I don't know if he'll actually test the water or just re-up.
Oh, yeah. But he's not picking up that mutual option. He will be – he'll have to get a new deal if he's going to stay with the Cubs. And they have a lot of outfield – like, with Schwarber coming back, they might not really have a need if they're going to keep Wilson. Like, they're going to have a glut, so
– I'm going to prepare you for 2 eventualities, okay? Number one is John Jay.
On the what?
John Jay.
I guess I'm not prepared to say this bottom 3 offense team, like, oh, just put like a defensive placeholder there, it'll be fine.
But John Jay would be a noticeable offensive improvement.
No, he wouldn't. Over J.B. Shaw. Got it.
Maybe. I mean, over whoever you've played there this year. He is an above average offensive player per WRC plus.
He's got like a 380 BABIP right now.
Yeah. That's true.
And his strikeout rate spiked and his walk rate went down. And he doesn't have great power.
Are you implying that those are things that would prevent the White Sox from signing?
I'm saying that that doesn't look good, man.
I didn't say these were good ideas. I said I was preparing you for eventualities.
Okay.
And the other one, and I'm really excited about this, because there's the hope. There's like a sliver of hope to it. And then there's just, it's going to be really bad, is Carlos Gomez.
Oh, I've called that one already. It's going to be a 1-year, $7.5 million deal.
I'm very excited for his White Sox career.
All 9 weeks of it.
Oh, I'd give him till at least August.
They don't have replacements. There's no way they would just keep they would just dump him, because then you're putting JB Sheck back out there. Oh God, he hasn't gotten a hit since he hit that 3-run homer in his first plate appearance. Oh Jesus. I was joking about him hitting a 3-run home run, like, to screw the Astros, because the Rangers have been so lucky this year in his first plate appearance with the Rangers, and then he's 0 for 18 since. Oh, I guess before today, he went 2 for 3.
See? So, there you go. There's life in him yet.
I'm excited about the Rangers in the playoffs.
I think Bannister is really interesting.
Bannister is an underreported, awful tactician. He's going to give people strokes.
Yet he's 30-8 in one run games this year.
One of those eight games was where he left Nick Martinez in to like pitch the 10th by himself, even after he loaded the bases with no one out and kept his closer in the
bullpen. No, that wasn't a one run game. That was a 4-run game. Or is that the Frazier Grand Slam game?
No.
Oh.
It was like Jose Abreu in the midst of his funk. It's like a weak walk-off dribbler to end it.
Oh, yeah, that game.
I'm really excited for, like, AJ Griffin playoff starter.
Lucas Harrell getting, like, multiple playoff innings.
No, Lucas Harrell won't get it. No. He's not even on their roster right now, is he?
I thought he's hurt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll always remember I went to his major league debut the day before Mark Burley threw a perfect game.
Seeing Lucas Harrell confused/dejected like stare on national television.
Is it as good as watching Clayton Richard field his position on national television?
Well, he's got he bumps his hat up to the top of his head. And, he has, these big prominent front teeth that, overbite in his bottom lip while he just, stares out at center field. It's pretty good.
I am excited for the playoffs because, I've barely felt joy watching baseball in a month. Well, that's not true, but, watching White Sox baseball, I felt no joy at all.
Being dead inside is a much better approach anyway.
Yeah, it's just... it's just kind of boring.
I like watching Quintana and Sale while they're here. I mean, might as well enjoy them. They're stuck here.
I still do enjoy them, and I would enjoy watching Tim.
Rodon's been great.
Yeah, Rodon's been really cool. So
what are you what odds are you guys putting on either of them being traded in the offseason?
I think there's a good chance one will. But I don't know which, and I don't know, actually. I don't know if they could ever trade them. I don't know if they could ever get to the point where they're just like, fuck it, we're going to trade two of the top four Cy Young vote getters. I think that's how it's going to end up this year. Maybe not quite that high, but pretty damn close. if I had to vote right now, I'd probably put Kluber first and then those two second and third.
Mm-hmm.
If not Sale first or Quintana first. I really don't know.
I'm putting my money on Stan Pat and slap some veteran band-aids on those same old roster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is that the worst? I mean, I think this is not going to be any news to anybody, but is that the worst approach? Because you can either do, I mean, obviously investing money in the team is the best approach, right? But if that's not going to happen, don't you go for it with this roster one more time?
Well, are you going for it if you're not investing money in it?
Well, that's what they did this year. They said they were going for it and they didn't invest money in it.
Yeah.
So that gets aggravated over a while.
Yeah, it's going to be the same old shit. They're going to be just good enough to convince them, you know, if things totally break right, maybe they'll be okay. What was that?
I coughed. I apologize.
Oh, my God. Weaver had 5Ks tonight.
My Skype is stalling out, so it's not letting me mute. I'm dying. Don't worry about it.
Maybe this is a really tortured comparison to try to link up with the interests of the guests, but I feel like the Dodgers were kind of in a similar situation where their fans thought that they were not seriously competing this year because they did not spend as much money, I guess, as the Dodgers were accustomed to spending. I guess, do you see any parallels between, like, their twin efforts to kind of develop their organizational depth while also competing?
The Dodgers spend a shit ton of money in, like, other markets. Like, I mean, obviously, you would, like, if... I see the comparison in the sense that in how it looks to fans, maybe, but the Dodgers, for one, don't have like a horseshit major league roster, even if their pitching staff is like Craig dying of coughs in the fourth spot.
Are the White Sox like the Dodgers if everything they were doing up was messed up and not working?
You're saying, are they like a 30th percentile out like version of the Dodgers or whatever?
Yeah,
about money on international markets.
Well, yeah, I mean there is that difference, but there's also, I mean, I think the Dodgers attempted to address their organizational depth, and I don't think the White Sox did. Right, like they certainly they didn't spend where they could have in terms of like Zach Greinke or Johnny Cueto or wherever, and I think the Kazmir contract is going to look really bad, but at the same time, like when you look at that trade that they were both involved in with the Reds, right, with Todd Frazier and the guys that the Dodgers got, you know, obviously they spun Montas off, but and Johnson has been, you know, up and down, but not really particularly useful. But
you guys called up Micah Johnson?
I think early in the season he was up for a little bit. But the...
Aren't all of them significantly hurt? Like, Montas has been hurt all year. Trace
dead. Yeah, but, well, okay, but, I mean, Trace alone, obviously, his start to the year was incredible. And then, yes, they've all been hurt. But the... I think the idea with that, though, was, like, that was all AAA depth, right? And Montas was hurt in the offseason, right? Like, he wasn't healthy going into the season, if I recall. But then his injury was worse than...
Yeah, he strained the ribs. Then he lost the ribs. Now he doesn't have the ribs.
Now he has Eve to his...
He's cracked a second rib, right? Like, they removed a rib or something, right?
I know that he has less ribs than he started 2016 with.
Yeah, so right, yeah. So I think they had to remove a rib, and then when he was returning from that, they discovered a crack in another rib. So he's having, like, biblical problems. But,
I got it.
You know, the idea there was though, AAA depth, right? And you could have seen if with a healthy Montas, even if he came back in June, let's say, or July, how he could have easily impacted the Dodgers, who have had a fair number of bullpen issues. So, you know, Johnson, I that might have been wish casting from, you know, or just someone was high on him, and I never was, and we talked about that at the time. And, you know, that,
a lot of
but,
the
it, but it was depth, right? I mean, you know, he doesn't have to be good to be depth.
Yeah.
And I think the difference is that, you know, the White Sox had none already, or relatively little, and these three guys were at that level, and, I mean, I think they were pretty much all they had, right?
The Sox have a guy who I think would be a really good depth piece playing second base right now, and Tyler Saladino. Like, they have their depth guys playing way too much.
Well, he's playing because Lurie is hurt, which
true.
Also is like the most foreseeable thing of all time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, on some level, right, like, Lurie was hurt as soon as, I mean, he was healthy the entire time that your season mattered.
Yeah.
I mean, so, I mean, it's just, it's better than him, his health being a negative impact on the season, right?
Right.
I mean, the alternative is that you played Jimmy Rollins when your season mattered, so.
Well, we did. Jimmy Rollins.
No, I'm saying, sorry, not the alternative, but like the flip side of that.
Oh, okay.
Also, yeah. A lot of Deanna Navarro.
Yeah. But now you've got, I don't even know how to say his name.
Venezuelan left-handed Mike Piazza. That can be your shorthand when you can't think of his name.
That's the one.
If he didn't have power.
Right.
Yeah, has Narvaez even hit a home run yet?
I'm happy when he doubles.
Yeah, I like his plate approach a lot. I like Alex Avila's plate approach a lot. I don't really think he can actually hit. But that still makes him better than Diner Navarro, because Diner Navarro couldn't hit and also was, like, the worst defensive player in the majors, according to our stats.
That sounds about right.
Now that he's, like,
gone... Are you saying he's the Jared Weaver of catching?
He was the Jared Weaver of position players.
Now that, like, the season's in past tense, he's gone, he's accumulated, like, these god-awful framing numbers, and I don't have to feel like I'm going out on a limb to, like, frame scout. He had, like, the laziest actions behind the plate I've ever seen.
Yeah. It's like he didn't even care, like, about framing.
I can't imagine anyone, like, looking at him catch, like, pitches and be like, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the White Sox don't really care about framing either. They don't think it's a real thing or something like that. Because of the transactions they made prior to the year, I think there's a pretty good chance that that's the case.
They either don't care, or they thought they could find some sort of inefficiency by not valuing it, and they totally didn't.
That's what my theory was heading into the year, that they either thought they could teach through framing, or that framing was more dependent on pitchers than we thought. Like, I thought that one of those things might be the case, or that they found something in pitch calling, but, like, none of those things seemed to happen. They definitely didn't teach framing. The value seemed to not be there, and Navarro's pitch calling was really weird, too. Like, he didn't like having Chris Sale throw changeups, which, when Chris Sale throws changeups, he's the best.
Ethan, do you know, I don't know if it's on the site, but do you know how he checked out in the pitch calling metrics?
He was very low on off-speed pitches. Navarro was. Like, he mm-hmm. was one of the lowest in all of baseball on off-speed pitches.
Yeah.
Those are not on the site yet, though.
Gotcha. It's probably weird to have a guest asking questions, but the question to me is, what is the path to contention then?
Because
frankly, the Central is not. I mean, the Indians are good, right? Cleveland's good, but I don't think they're indomitable.
Right, they're not indomitable, but they also have a very strong farm system. Like,
they,
that's a problem. That's a big problem. Unless they have a 2016 Mets year next year where all their pitching dies. But I mean, and I mean, a team built on pitching, that can happen.
Yeah, but, I mean, but they've also their farm system. I mean, look, they lost Clint Frazier. That's not nothing. They still have outfielders coming, but, you know, we don't know what Michael Brantley's deal is going to be coming back off of these injuries. And their outfield is not, I mean, they're literally actively trading for Coco Crisp. So,
right. Yeah.
Their infield is obviously really good. I don't see Mike Napoli having this year again.
No,
I don't know. They're very good, but they're also like catcher is worse than the White Sox.
Yan Gomes can do something.
No, like, he can, but like if you want to talk about 2016.
No, right? 2016, like, Dino Navarro is the worst player in Major League Baseball.
But he's also only half of it. I mean, what was Yan Gomes?
Yan Gomes still had decent framing numbers, so it
looked good. Yeah, decent. Yeah, okay. But offensively, he was a black hole.
Oh, yeah. Offensively, he was like 500 OPS.
Yeah.
I mean, the path to contention is finding a fielder and finding a DH, which is the same exact path to contention as last year was, which really makes it hurt, because they need to find a center fielder and DH. I mean, they need more. They need more than that.
They probably need a catcher.
Yeah, they need a catcher, too. And that's exact same position they were heading
But the question is, I mean, like, look, we know every year that, like, teams add difference makers for relatively little, right? I mean, this happens every year. So the question is, like, I understand that they don't spend, but how much would you guess that they spend this offseason?
I wouldn't give $100 million to Wilson Ramos, and then why would that backfire?
Is Wilson Ramos a free agent?
Yes.
He is, yeah.
Is he the best free agent on the market other than Cespedes?
You could argue Justin Turner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought you said Jacob Turner for a second.
Edwin Encarnacion.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
isn't Bautista a free agent, too?
Yeah, yeah, Bautista and Encarnacion. But those are all old dudes. Even Turner's pretty old, 30.
Yeah.
I guess Ramos is in catcher years is probably older than that.
He's 29, right? So.
Yeah, and in catcher years, that might as well be 34.
And he's had a slew of injuries. They've all been cured, but there's a lot of
the guy that I wanted the Sox to get prior to this year, which kind of got messed up by qualifying offers, was Wieters. I thought that would make sense.
Well, he's available too.
Yep.
But he, again, I mean, are they spending for him? My guess is, based on what you guys have said, is no.
I mean, I don't think Wieters is going to cost a ton of money. He'd probably be in their mid-level free agent tier that they're usually willing to spend on.
How much is Castro getting, you think?
Jason?
Yes.
Oh,
the guy who's good at things that the White Sox don't care about.
Oh,
I can't imagine he'd get more than like 327 or no, like 335.
Jason Castro, do you think he's really getting that?
I can't. Like that'd be the absolute max if someone's like, "Oh, we really need a catcher." He's still kind of young. I mean, has he been? He's been better this year, right? Or
better than he was, but it's all walk rate. It's all walk rate. I mean, he's striking out 34% of the time.
Okay.
He's slugging 390. I mean, yeah, like, so he has like a, I mean, it's, he's hitting 217, but his OBP is 322 because he walks 13% of the time.
Sounds and like that. Dealer.
Yeah, I mean, it's
definitely.
I don't know what he's got with our, I can look up with our catching metrics, but I would be surprised if he's a 2.7 WAR player with his right now with his catching stats.
The Sox at some point were very interested in Gary Sanchez, so maybe they aren't completely terrible at player evaluation.
I mean, I guess the question is, like, they're not going to go for Edwin Encarnacion, right?
It'd be very White Sox for their biggest contract ever to be Edwin Encarnacion, and then he'd be terrible.
Right, because he'll be 35. I mean, Mitch Moreland?
I mean, is it crazy to bring back Morneau? Probably, but it would also be a White Sox-y thing to do.
I mean, you can bring him back, but...
I don't want a 600 PA bring him back.
I wouldn't bring him back for anything more than, like, what, a million? I mean, what do you...
He's 1.5 this year.
Isn't he 40?
No, he's younger 40. Than that. He's like 34. He's 35. He feels older because of all the concussions.
Yeah, well...
He's not really, like, getting on base.
No, his value's all in power right now, right?
Which is not what you would have thought coming in.
No, I mean, because he won a batting title in Colorado.
With a 149 ISO in Coors. So the fact that he's, like, clocking dingers is kind of a surprise.
It's a little concerning.
But then again, he was really good at that in really hard ballparks to hit home runs. I don't know. He's had a really weird career. He shouldn't have won the MVP in the year that he won MVP. The year that he, like, completely fell off the map, he was, like, by far the best player in baseball when he went on the DL. And then he died.
But now he's back. And he's the only offensive upgrade they added all midseason.
And he's been a guy who, if he's been this for an entire year, like, you finally solved the DH, kind of.
I'm gonna call either Mitch Moreland or Brandon Moss for you guys.
Oh, Brandon Moss would be a classic White Sox overpay where he just gets a lot of money and then reverts to being Brandon Moss. Then again, everyone's like, oh, the White Sox are totally gonna sign Daniel Murphy, and they didn't. And, like, people were making fun
of that now.
People were saying like classic White Sox, and I was like, oh, I don't want any part of that. And people are like, oh, the Sox are going to give him way too much money.
I don't think anyone's talking about Brandon Moss enough. He's slugging .570.
Oh, the Cardinals and Royals just have they found a spring of devil magic.
It's down to .567 tonight. He's washed up.
What?
It's down to .567. He's on the downslide now.
Oh, no. Brutal. I mean, he is striking 30% of the time. Like, he's probably going to fall off a cliff, right, in terms of performance?
Especially if he goes to the White Sox, because they kill anyone they want to put at DH.
I think Dark Horse, I think you guys should openly campaign for Eric Thames. Is it Eric Thames? Is it Marcus Thames? I always get it. It's Thames, isn't it?
I believe so. It's definitely Marcus Thames. So.
Why is he listed on the MLB Trade Rumors free agent list? Is that why you're mentioning him?
Absolutely. He's crushing it in Korea.
Are we not all on that page right now?
I remember looking at Gung Ho Park's numbers and just like seeing, oh my God, Eric Thames is Korean Babe Ruth in the sense that he's in Korea and hitting like Babe Ruth, not that he is.
That would be great if you made that mistake, though.
We could also campaign for Dion Viciedo, who I think would probably hit better than Avisail Garcia.
Dion might be a worse defender than Avisail.
Yeah, but Avi was playing DH most of the year. Like, if it weren't for injuries, like, Avi's only playing the field because of injuries. He's not supposed to be playing the field. So he's a 700 OPS DH who's half of a platoon. Like, he wasn't even hitting a lot of righties.
Ethan, if you seriously campaign to bring back Dion for another second, I'm going to demand you're evaluated.
I feel like we've gone far afield. The question I have in my mind is, like, I don't think... Do you think that there's any semblance of a half measure that gets you guys closer?
Yeah, like, if they're not crappy.
I mean, half measures and luck can get you to the playoffs. The Indians' entire offseason was a bunch of half measures. They signed Mike Napoli and
Rajai Davis and Marlon Byrd. Like, that was their offseason. I thought their offseason was terrible.
Like, if you don't, like, waste a position pursuing a logical fallacy like they did with catcher and get, like, a league average bat at center field and maybe get a good Frazier season.
Yeah.
Actually, like, sign some decent relievers so Nate Jones doesn't account for, like, every blown save because he's the only person pitching with a
So this is what I was thinking. I mean, you talk about relievers, and the bullpen is what I saw you say the other day. It's okay, right? I mean, it's like okay.
It's okay if their entire bullpen wouldn't have died. Like,
yeah,
they've lost. They have Jones and Robertson, but they lost their three next best guys, and like everyone else that pitches is really bad. They're getting important. Matt Albers is near the top of the league among relievers in innings pitched, and he has like a 4 strikeout rate and an ERA higher than that.
So the question then to me would be, does Robertson have any value, and can you trade him for something that would help elsewhere and just gamble on finding, you know, just taking, bringing in a bunch of relief arms and cycling through them?
Your bullpen is so thin on anybody realistic right now. Like, I mentioned that they are average-ish because that's just what their stats are for the year, because they were a lot stronger earlier in the year. If you actually look at, like, their rundown right now, it's a disaster. Like, they don't have anybody worth high-leverage appearance after Nate Jones.
Sure, but at the same time, like, you know, Jeanmarc Gomez was terrible, and he's been, like, a fine reliever, and he was free this offseason, right? I mean... The point is that you can gamble on the variance in the bullpen. Wouldn't you if you could create depth at a different position, wouldn't you do it?
That's kind of what they did with Zach Duke, I guess. But I don't know how much you're getting for David Robertson at this point.
That was the question: do they have? I mean, does he have value? And that's I'm less.
I doubt it. Honestly, I don't think he has real value. I think that between the contract,
what is he on the hook for? Did he have the same as Miller, or he 440 or something like that?
It's 4 instead of 3.
I thought it was 446.
Yeah.
Okay.
The White Sox is always making me make insane, like, they're forcing me to kind of, like, make qualifying statements that you wouldn't have to make for normal places. Yes, you can, leave your reliever up to chance, but I'm talking in the wake of 2014 where they literally put 7 guys who were all lotto tickets and then like half of them flopped and then they had a terrible bullpen. Like normally when you talk about leaving some reliever slots so you have the chance, you have 2-3 high leverage guys and you leave the rest up to chance. That's what I'm saying the White Sox have to be, is something closer to that.
Yeah. No, and I think that's reasonable. I'm just kind of prodding.
So I don't think they can start next year with just like Jones, Putnam coming off an injury, and then just roll the dice for the next 5 slots.
You'll probably have Bird, right? I mean, or Birdie, sorry.
Right.
But do you know, like, is he going to throw strikes when he gets to the majors?
Oh, no, I don't know. But that's a gamble on talent as opposed to, right?
For
I mean,
sure.
Like, everyone else you bring in, you're gambling on hopefully a good year. That's a gamble on talent.
If someone's giving you a starting center fielder for David Robertson, you do it. But no one's doing that.
Is it that? So he's 25 million. He's got 12 and 13 million left on his deal after this year. Is it? I mean, given the market for relievers, is that truly unreasonable?
After last year, I would think it wouldn't be.
After this year, maybe so.
Yeah, the K rate's down. The walk rate's up. Like, they're not good signs.
No, I agree, which might be also another compelling reason to try and flip him at this point, right? I mean, you can argue that the K rate's down, but he's still at 10 per 9, and that's an improvement for somebody, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Someone who fancies themselves a contender might be in on it.
Zach Duke got you Charlie Tilson. I'm not expecting, obviously David Robertson's a pretty big step up from Zach Duke, but I'm not expecting, maybe you could get, a one-year, a guy who's on the last year of his deal, I guess. Like, a veteran-for-veteran swap. But I would have to look at who's out there, and it would have to be a very specific fit, I think.
Yeah.
just kind of like they have to become good at something or exceptional at something. And I guess their linchpin is still the rotation at this point. And even that, you kind of like, if you're going to stake the next team on that, you kind of take Miguel Gonzalez off of one of the guys you could maybe flip for something serviceable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the next year, the rotation looks like obviously Sale, Quintana, Rodon, and then you got Shields, Fulmer, and Gonzalez competing for those last, or like pitching those last three spots, which, I mean, you could do worse. You could do a lot worse in the rotation, but that's not. I mean, it's honestly one of the better rotations in the AL, especially if somehow Shields, like, honestly, basically with Shields, you have to pray that he fixes something in the offseason somehow and goes back to being, like, a four who gets lit up sometimes rather than a completely useless major league starter. And if that happens, you could that's a really solid rotation, but it's not a rotation that is going to make up for the offense that they have right now. They really need to be a lot closer to average, and they've been bottom five every single year in offense. In, like, the last 6 years, they've been bottom five almost every year, except for, like, 2012. And I guess pre-2012, they weren't bottom five. Just makes sense.
I can't believe they have to pay Albers money to get him off their team.
Did they cut him?
No, but they have a buyout for his contract next year.
Oh, he's so bad.
He's excitable, though.
Not much anymore.
It was really funny at the beginning of the year because he was actually pitching, like, he looked decent. Like, he looked like he was getting swings and misses, which never made sense at the time. But now it makes sense that he's bad, but I don't even. He's still never had a slave. I think he has the highest. The big, effectively wild bit is that he has the highest amount of games finished of any pitcher ever without a save.
Yeah, well, it's him or Webb, right?
Yeah, and he's leading the league, or he's still ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, he had his chance and he blew it.
Did he?
Yeah, he finally had a chance in, like, he was the last pitcher in a game, and he. I think he ended up getting the win. I think the Sox won, but he blew the save.
Was it the day he got a double? No, he didn't blow that.
No, 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 it wasn't that one.
I forgot that. If they would have won,
that was amazing, though.
It was. There have been a few weirdly amazing moments and weirdly, like, national attention moments of this team.
Let's see. Year.
Especially for Albers in the middle of a season that, like, I don't know, might keep him from getting a major league deal ever again.
Okay, let's see. No, wasn't that one.
The Sox are really good at finding guys who are, like, probably never going to play in the majors again after they. I mean, is Avi going to get a major league? I guess Avi probably will, but I thought Diane would, and he just went straight to Japan. Avi seems like he'd be ticketed for Japan pretty soon. Or the White Sox starting right field job.
I found that it was a game against the Royals. They lost. It was a 14-inning game.
I mean, I wouldn't trust him with a 3-run lead or a 2-run lead.
Yeah.
Robin keeps pitching him. It's inexplicable.
Well,
doesn't matter at this point.
It doesn't. That's why, like, why are you pitching him?
Wow.
Because they're, like, I mean, you go to Yanoa. Yanoa's, like, has kind of cool stuff. I don't think he has any idea where it's going ever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Mostly it's the choosing Albers over Yanoa a lot in games that don't mean anything. Like, routinely throwing out this guy is bad and he's not going to on the team next year.
Do you think Yanoa, like, they're just worried about him breaking? He breaks a lot.
Perhaps.
Yeah, the thing is, like, at least Albers, like, you can throw, I guess today he didn't get an out, but you can usually throw him in and it'll get you an inning. It'll just be really bad.
I mean, he would have got them outs eventually if they just kept letting him play.
Yeah, and actually they did go to Yanoa after him.
So, Craig.
Yes.
Are the Dodgers going to trade Yasiel Puig to the White Sox?
I don't know who. I mean, what we
We talked about this. Who would they send back?
Who do you want?
I don't have much of an opinion on that. That's the problem.
Tyler Saladino is a gamer.
I highly dislike his mustache choices.
I think you can make him shave it.
I mean, what? They're not the Martins.
Have you seen his back tattoo?
Oh God!
Is it worse than Sales?
No.
It's a hype article.
It's a huge dragon. It's in honor of his like dead friend.
Do you think he was like he saw an Affliction T-shirt and was like yes, but all the time?
That's not what he gave. That's not the quote he gave to reporters.
But realistically, do you think it's possible?
It's possible. I do like that Sales' response to, at this point is just like, yeah, I thought it was a good idea, but it wasn't.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. I don't know what they're going to do with Puig. I mean, the Rosenthal keeps saying that an off-season trade seems more likely than anything. I don't know. I kind of think it would be a shame to trade him.
I do too. I think it would be a total waste of value because, like, his value is at its absolute nadir.
Right, and on top of that, like, he's probably gonna opt out of his really cheap deal. This is the other thing people like, they say, oh look, he's got this crazy cheap deal because he signed a
arbitration.
Yeah, right. It was like a 6-year, $42 million deal, but he can opt out of it into arbitration. And even though he's been bad this year, like his first three seasons, he's been good enough to earn some serious money. So
yeah, Brady is going to do the same thing after this year. I don't think people realize that because he can.
Yeah, so I don't think. I mean, look, I don't have a problem with the idea of trading him at some point, but I don't know if this, like, they've also kind of submarined his value, right? Like they sent him down since he came off the DL, and before they sent him down, he had OPS like 830. And so it seemed like he was at least trending up, even if it wasn't, you know, what we were used to given his first couple of seasons. But I just don't think that. I still think he's one of their better players. I mean, like, they routinely start Howie Kendrick in the outfield. And yeah, it's like, so what do you, you know what I mean? Like, what, like, Josh Reddick's going to be a free agent, and he's struggled since the trade anyway. I mean, you have Jock, who they don't play against lefties, and, you know, maybe Trace is part of that group next year if he's healthy, but he's probably more of a platoon bat anyway, right?
Yeah.
So ultimately, like, who are you playing out there? I think they'd have to go sign somebody, basically, which seems stupid if you have Puig on your roster.
Absolutely. How much would you say his value has been tanked? Like, same trade value like Miguel Gonzalez, right?
Yeah, sure.
Did you know that Miguel Gonzalez has a 2.76 ERA over his last seven starts before his groin went owie?
I thought Carson Fulmer made sense as a return, but
yeah, I mean, it's possible. I lean towards the idea that Fulmer is a reliever long term, which that still might be accurate value. By the way, I'm not trying to say that would like preclude any transaction. I just don't know if that might be fair value. I don't know if you aim higher if you're the Dodgers, right? I mean, like, that might be something you,
I really don't know what they're asking for. Like, it's, well, really, like,
either. I think, like, I'm,
some reports seem like they were just giving him away, but that seemed like, it seemed like the market would do better than that. Like, it seemed like someone would pay more than giving away for Yasiel Puig for even the slight chance. I mean, the White Sox are putting Avisaíl García out in right field every day.
They're evaluating him, Ethan. They're watching him close.
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to the fact that there are obviously other things at play with Puig than just performance. But right. At the same time, I think that ultimately, this to me is a situation where I can understand why teams would be weary of acquiring him or paying even what we might consider market rate to acquire him or someone of his talent. But if that's the case, what I don't understand is why you would just give in to that and not wait until, you know, wait until he puts together, you know, 6 good weeks. And then even if you sold him at a discount from those 6 weeks, you're probably selling him at a markup from whatever he's at now.
Sure.
And just, it makes all the sense in the world to me for them to just wait it out. You know, this it felt like to me when everyone was like, the Phillies have to trade Cole Hamels. They're stupid for holding on to him at this point. I don't see people saying that about the Dodgers, by the way. But you know what I mean? It was like this thing where it was like, oh, they have to trade him even though they're not getting good offers. And then, you know, like they waited 3 months and they sold him for a king's ransom.
Right. No, that's definitely fair. Unless there's just something where, like, they don't ever want him to play a major league game for them again.
But yeah, right. That is, and that seems to be a potential possibility.
Yeah, and if there's something that bad, I don't know what it would be. It's such a weird situation because of that. I don't know.
It's a very weird situation. I mean, I think it's. It's a little bit. I mean, it's not the same because Chris Sale has been extremely good, but like in terms of the off the field stuff and the tension between the organization and the player, it does kind of feel that way, right? Where everyone else is going to lowball you, and it just makes sense to hold on to him.
I think the difference with Sale is like at least his teammates like him, while there's a reputation with Puig that like his teammates really don't like him.
Yeah, and that's absolutely.
Sale's kind of in the Josh Donaldson boat where he's just ripping on upper management. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Donaldson got acquired for a lot less after. And I think a lot of that, if you look back at the quotes he said, he basically called ownership super cheap and they had money, but they weren't spending it. And then he got traded.
Which is true, by the way.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I wish Chris Sale would say the same thing about the White Sox, unless it means that Chris Sale's going to get traded. But because it also would be true about the White Sox, I assume.
Yeah,
I mean, kind of implied it.
Yeah, but he didn't. Josh Donaldson straight up said they have, like he said on Twitter, they have money, they just don't spend it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the majority owner of the A's is worth like $2 billion. So
Jerry Reinsdorf owns two teams that are worth $1 billion each, though he doesn't own the entire team for the Sox.
Yeah, I mean, the majority owner of the A's is he's like the Gap. Like, he inherited everything that the Gap, like the Gap company.
It's going to blow our minds when we realize that Mike Musery is Sale's alt account, and he's been ripping the org the entire time.
But we met him.
Do you think Sale isn't rich enough to provide a cover?
True.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dodgers are a fascinating team in a lot of ways. I also think that they get enough press that people are probably, you know, that it's not necessarily the most interesting thing to hear about, especially since, like, the bottom line is that they can spend their way out of anything, and that's just not that. That in itself is not that interesting, but I don't know. They have a lot of weird things going on, and I feel like they're trying a lot of stuff, but I don't know. I thought their approach to the offseason was really not great, and I'm not extremely optimistic on their approach to next offseason too. Like I don't know if they're going to spend what it takes to keep Turner, which might be a smart move, but they don't really have an internal replacement, and I don't know. It's going to be a really weird situation because he's a huge piece of their offense the last 2 years. So, I don't know.
You know, since we've had you on for a while, and it is very late at night, I was thinking we would wrap up by kind of returning to the origin of our conversation, which is Tim Anderson.
Yeah.
Because I am working on a piece about what a 25-man roster entirely of Tim Anderson's would do.
Mm-hmm.
Given our evaluation of his arm, what would my plan to have Tim Anderson constantly working in one-inning shifts do over a full season?
Oh, man. I...
Rotating is... 25 Tim Andersons, by the way.
Yeah, this is like...
Throwing to Tim Anderson behind the plate, who is presumably a horseshit framer.
Yeah, have you talked to Patrick Dubuque at all?
No.
He somewhat famously... What, he did a roster of 25 Adam Dunns a few years ago.
I should read
At Knotgrass. And someone else recently did, like, 25 something else. I can't remember who it was, but
adorable puppies.
Oh, I wish that would be good. I'm gonna send this to you so you have it. But he actually ran like numbers on it and whatnot. He might be a valuable resource.
You could do a Sabres sim of it.
Oh, he did. Well, we can transition. This could be a good transition into our non-baseball topic, James, but he did four teams in the Clone Baseball League. It was the Adam Dunns, the D. Gordons, the Bartolo Colones, and the Koji Uehara's.
My article right now has a lot of discussion of clubhouse dynamics.
You don't think they'd all get along?
I don't know. They either like would get along like great, and they'd be like the most unified team in history, or like they'd start like. They'd break apart as they discovered, like, the entirely arbitrary way in which, like, their positions were determined and what their roles are and, like, who's pitching high leverage. It's, like, it's
Didn't
just random.
They also break apart in existential ways because they realize they're all the same?
Would they, like, falsify their identity as, like, the other ones to, like, get bigger roles?
Would they get tattoos?
Well, yeah. Or would they bristle at being tattooed with numbers?
What if they were distinct symbols rather than numbers? But they're branded like horses.
Yeah, I don't think that'd be good for morale. What about when one of them gets hurt and I have to call up Tyler Saladino, and it's Tyler Saladino in a clubhouse full of, like, 24 Tim Andersons? How does he get along? That's got to be awkward as hell. Does anyone talk to him? Does everyone talk to him?
This is like a baseball version of The Sixth Day. Did anyone watch that?
With Arnold Schwarzenegger? Does that mean, like,
yes,
Tim Andersons
absolutely
kill everybody?
Well, they had a way to determine, like, which one was what number clone, right? But it wasn't, like, branding or something. It was, like, something in their lip or their eye or something.
Also, I was considering, like, how we acquire the Tim Andersons. Are they clones, or is there, like, a fissure in the parallel universes that allows, like, 24 Tim Andersons to migrate over? Does that mean we get, like, completely, like, non-baseball interested Tim Andersons? Do we get, like, tax attorney Tim Anderson?
Are you going to link to the tweet that inspired this all?
I referenced it, but I wasn't going to link to it.